Welcome to the WBGO Journal. I'm Doug Doyle. Today, New Jersey and New York City prepare for Sunday's big snowstorm.
Every municipality has set up their own warming centers within their community. Depending on the severity of the storm, we generally try to keep our libraries open.
Former Democratic Congresswoman Mikey Sherrill is now New Jersey's 57th governor.
We're facing an affordability crisis, and you want costs to come down. And you want that to begin today.
WBGO's John Kalish has the story of a new musical in Manhattan.
Called Just Desserts. It's about a bake-off in fictional Jefferson County, somewhere in the Midwest.
And I'll chat with Tony Award winner and three-time Grammy-nominated singer and actress Melba Moore about her new memoir.
Yeah, she said, Ma, everybody got a book but you. So I thought, yeah, I've seen a lot of autobiographies. So I said, okay, well, let's do an autobiography.
All this coming up today on the WBGO Journal. New Jersey and New York City are preparing for a whopper of a snowstorm on Sunday. Forecasters predicting anywhere between 8 inches to a foot of snow could accumulate, along with ice, prompting nasty road conditions. WBGO's David Matthau reports the Garden State appears ready to deal with Old Man Winter.
Jersey DOT Assistant Commissioner Chris Feintel says additional fuel, rock salt, and brine solution has been delivered, and a small army of workers will be ready to roll once the flakes start flying.
We have, in total, 3,400 pieces of snow equipment, so that's both the salt spreaders and the plows statewide.
Mercer County Executive Dan Benson says his office is working closely with local leaders preparing for the storm, and if a resident's heat goes off, they can seek immediate relief.
Every municipality has set up their own warming centers within their community. Depending on the severity of the storm, we generally try to keep our libraries open to serve as warming centers.
He says if people don't really need to be out, they should, quote, stay home, stay off the roads during the storm, and let the professionals clear those roads so everyone stays safe. David Matthau, WBGO News.
In New York City, meanwhile, it will be the first major weather event for Mayor Zohran Mamdani to deal with. But as WBGO's Scott Pringle reports, the administration plans to get a jump on Sunday's storm.
Sanitation crews will first pre-treat major highways, roads, and bike lanes well before the snow starts. On Saturday, 2,000 workers will start 12-hour storm shifts and will begin plowing once there's 2 inches on the ground. Mamdani says whether the storm ends up being big or small, New Yorkers should take precaution.
If you're interested in buying some groceries or getting a new winter coat, do not leave it until the weekend.
Along with the storm, there will be a cold air mass triggering a code blue alert.
Outreach teams are going to canvass the city to connect vulnerable New Yorkers to shelter.
Mamdani says he'll do his best to keep schools open on Monday. Scott Pringle, WBGO News.
Former Democratic Congresswoman Mikey Sherrill became New Jersey's 57th governor with an inaugural ceremony at NJPAC in Newark on Tuesday, taking the oath of office from Stuart Rabner, Chief Justice of the New Jersey Supreme Court.
I'm Mikey Sherrill.
I, Mikey Sherrill.
Elected governor of the state of New Jersey.
Elected governor of the state of New Jersey.
Do solemnly promise and swear.
Do solemnly promise and swear
that I will support the Constitution of the United States.
That I will support the Constitution of the United States.
And the Constitution of the State of New Jersey.
And the Constitution of the State of New Jersey.
And that I will bear true faith and allegiance to the same.
And that I will bear true faith and allegiance to the same.
And to the governments established in the United States.
And to the governments established in the United States.
And in this state.
And in this state.
Under the authority of the people.
Under the authority of the people.
And that I will diligently.
And that I will diligently.
Faithfully.
Faithfully.
Impartially.
Impartially.
Justly.
Justly.
And to the best of my knowledge and ability.
And to the best of my knowledge and ability.
Execute the office.
Execute the office.
In conformity with the powers delegated to me.
In conformity with the powers delegated to me.
And that I will.
And that I will.
To the utmost of my skill and ability.
To the utmost of my skill and ability.
Promote the peace and prosperity.
Promote the peace and prosperity.
And maintain the lawful rights of the state of New Jersey.
And maintain the lawful rights of the state of New Jersey.
So help me God.
So help me God.
Congratulations, Governor.
Governor Sherrill wasted no time in blasting President Donald Trump, comparing his behavior to the tyranny of King George III during the American Revolution.
We see a a president illegally usurping power, unconstitutionally enacting a tariff regime to make billions for himself and his family while everyone else sees their costs go higher.
During her fiery speech, Governor Sherrill promised to fight to lower costs and give every state resident a chance to improve their lives.
I'm going to spend every minute trying to make New Jersey more affordable and open doors to opportunity across our state, because that's our history here. I've heard you in Trenton, where you want safer streets for kids, redevelopment programs that work and to provide jobs, and for the state to pay its fair share. I've heard you in South Jersey, where you want jobs and transportation investments, innovative businesses, and not to be forgotten or left behind. I've heard you in Hudson County, where you want housing you can afford and to open small businesses without costly bureaucracy and red tape. I've heard you, New Jersey. We're facing an affordability crisis, and you want costs to come down. And you want that to begin today. You don't want a strongly worded letter. You don't want a 10-year study. And you don't want empty words. In short, you are sick of the status quo. Well, guess what, guys? So am I. So right now, yes, before I even begin this speech, just making sure you were paying attention. I'm going to sign my first in a series of executive orders to declare a state of emergency on utility costs. I'm issuing an executive order giving the New Jersey Board of Public Utilities the authority to pause new utility requests for additional rate increases, and I will freeze rate hikes to finally provide families with real relief on their energy bills. I am issuing an executive order directing the Board of Public Utilities to open solicitations for new solar and storage power generation to modernize gas and nuclear generation so we can lower utility costs over the long term.
Governor Sherrill thanked Essex County Executive Joe DiVincenzo and Newark Mayor Raz Baraka during her speech. She also thanked outgoing Governor Phil Murphy for his service to the Garden State. A new musical titled Just Desserts opens in Manhattan next week. It's set at a county fair in the Midwest, where five contestants compete. WBGO's John Kalish caught up with the composer and lyricist.
I went to a potluck dinner party on New Year's Eve. My wife and I made a sweet potato dish flavored with garlic and cinnamon. Another guest named Brad Ross brought a delicious sour cream apple walnut pie he bought at a bakery in his neighborhood. Ross is a composer, and he just happened to have some flyers with him for a new musical he worked on called Just Desserts. It's about a bake-off in fictional Jefferson County, somewhere in the Midwest.
There's three rounds to the competition: cookies, pies, and cakes. There's five contestants. There's an MC who's the local TV weatherman.
The MC is Zach Harper, a pompous fellow who hosts the bake-off on a live cable TV telecast. Barbara Campbell wrote the book and lyrics for Just Desserts.
He is the one thing that helps bring the contestants together because he's basically kind of a jerk.
For 15 points, Emma Lee. Also with 15 points, Mrs. Mildred Waxworth Richardson. With 17 points, Jean Smith. And with a total of 19 points, Lou Battaglia.
Lou Battaglia is not a Midwest native. He's a Brooklyn guy who is out in the heartland to support a sister going through a rough divorce. Battaglia dreams of opening an Italian restaurant someday. And because his surname ends in a vowel, some people start to wonder if he's a mobster.
Nobody quite knows why a guy from Brooklyn is at this county fair. So there are lots of people who are making assumptions, and that leads, of course, to more misunderstandings.
I'll avoid dishing out any spoilers here, but will tell you that part of the drama in Just Desserts involves two of the contestants resorting to sabotage in their zeal for victory. Let's just say that a recipe can go very wrong if ingredients are mislabeled. Other flashpoints involve a flesh wound and a marriage proposal. Again, lyricist Barbara Campbell.
The baking aspect wasn't as interesting to me as the idea of here's a setting in which we can bring together people from disparate backgrounds, different personalities, strangers, and see what happens when they're put in a competition mode.
Besides Lou from Brooklyn, the other bakers are the twice-divorced Brandy, who does nails at a beauty parlor, a shy school nurse named Jean, Mildred, a department store CEO who is the reigning champion, and Emma, who sings about making it big as a baker.
She's just graduated from business school. She wants to start her own bakery, her own catering business. She wants to make a success of herself in the food industry.
I'll need confidence, daring, resources, and skill, and a lot of financial finesse. If I stick with my dream, keep my feet on the ground, I am bound to find success. I may look like an amateur baker to some, I may sound like a starry-eyed kid. Give me a chance to impress the world, and I'm convinced I'll make it big.
No actual cooking is done on stage, but I saw the props during a rehearsal and they looked good enough to eat. The actors spend some of their stage time behind five baking workstations, and there are also flashbacks on their family lives. The audience need not go home craving dessert. After the show, some of the city's premier bakeries will be selling goodies to munch on. Again, composer Brad Ross.
Every show has a different baker who's going to sell their stuff at the end of the show. Maury Rubin, who founded City Bakery, is coming. Amy Sherber of Amy's Bread is coming. Junior's Cheesecake is coming.
And after the matinee performance on Saturday, January 31st, audience members can buy brownies and chocolate chip cookies made by the autistic bakers at Invictus Bakery in Brooklyn. One of the Invictus bakers will be there as a brand ambassador. Just Desserts, a musical bake-off, runs from January 30th through February 22nd at AMT Theater on West 45th Street in Manhattan. For the WBGO Journal, I'm John Kalish.
Just Desserts, baked perfection, Just Desserts. Each confection looks and tastes like a work of art, made with skill, made with love, made with heart. This is it, almost bake time, this is it. Make or break time, some will stumble and some will fall. For when all said and done, there can be only one will show the world what it takes. Be the best darn baker who bakes Just Desserts.
You're listening to the WBGO Journal. I'm Doug Doyle. Tony Award winner and three-time Grammy nominee, Melba Moore is the author of the Amazon Books memoir, This Is It, Marvelous and Getting Better. The incredible trailblazer joins us today on WBGO. Melba Moore, great to see you again.
Thanks for having me back again, Douglas.
It was such a pleasure to talk to you last time. It was certainly an honor for me. You starred in the Broadway musicals Hair, Pearly, Timbuktu, Les Miserables. Your countless hits include You Stepped Into My Life, Read My Lips, Fallen, and This Is It. And you've obviously been a global success for more than 50 years. But this new book comes to share strategies for longevity and much more. Co-authored by Kevin E. Taylor, This Is It, Marvelous in Getting Better, takes the reader on the highs and lows of Melba's career. So tell us a little bit about your collaboration with Kevin Taylor and why you decided to work on this project that covers more than five decades.
I hadn't really been thinking about it, but of course, when you're having a good time, you forget that time is passing by and maybe you need to go, you know, just, I don't know, just take stock of what's going on. But if you look, I think as long as you're having a good time, you might not do that. But there's nothing like the next generation to wake you up.
Yeah.
My daughter said.
Yeah, your daughter, Charlie, right?
Yeah.
She was the one that told you to do it.
Yeah, she said, Ma, everybody got a book but you. So I thought, yeah, I've seen a lot of autobiographies. So I said, okay, well, let's do an autobiography. So once we got a team together, which included Angelo Ellerby, my publicist, he got me Kevin Taylor. And Kevin, he's a specialist in that area. So he explained to me it probably would be better if I started with a memoir, because that's, you're not trying to cover your whole life. Let me start small. So that's the reason why we did it with the memoir. And then Kevin further showed me, you have to put it in some kind of order. You can't just say, well, I was born here, and then go to the end.
You never really thought about so much being a trailblazer. You just did what you had to do to succeed, right?
And sometimes survive.
Yeah.
Getting into some areas that are very, very fabulous, but you're not trained for, you are doing things they're training you on the job, as it were, for almost everything. And you're just trying to survive. But I feel like I've been very, very blessed to be in some of these situations because I didn't have any clue what I was doing. So I guess the book, at Kevin's suggestion, is kind of centered on what are some of these ups and downs. And if you got a Tony Award and you just were in the Broadway musical Hair, people will automatically assume that they didn't know that you were a trained actor, that you at least knew how to audition. So it makes an interesting story, it seems, to some people as to actually how it actually happened.
Before we get to all the successes, what's the one story that kind of makes you cringe that you had to tell?
Oh, the story of getting evicted, losing my family, losing my daughter, losing my career, coming back, and how, well, it feels good to tell how people helped me to get back. But as to how it all happened and how it felt and what I went through, I can't really tell you some of the horrible things that happened. It would take away from the joy of the successes. There's so much. So I kind of let you know that it was pretty devastating. And it went on for a pretty long period of time. And here I am to survive it. But those are the stories, I think, that are the most impactful. They mean the most to you and they mean the most to the reader, because they realize that it's not all what they've seen. Even though they saw some pretty bad things, because I had to go on television to actually save myself and go to the media and actually have them help me tell my story because of the lies that were out there. So they know some of it, but some of it is just, it's heart-wrenching, and I didn't want the book to be that.
From Harlem to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, and before we talked last time, you were just about ready to receive that Walk of Fame recognition. I mentioned Broadway Pioneer. You won a Tony Award for Pearlie in 1970 and starred in Hair Lady, becoming the first Black actress to replace a white actress in a starring role and the first Black woman to play Fantine in Les Mis. Les Mis is one of my top favorites when it comes to musicals. For you, Fantine is such a tragic character. Take us back to the moment when you knew you were going to play this, and what memories do you have of playing Fantine?
Well, playing Fantine was, first of all, I was trying to file papers in the court to try to get custody of my daughter. It was in the middle of one of I had become homeless. I had some place to stay by then, but I was in Florida trying to get myself back on key here, get some work. And the talent coordinator for the musical Les Mis happened to see me and put me in Les Mis. So I had a friend there and trying to get my life back. But it was a perfect time for me to do a tragic role. Mm. I had no problem playing Fantine. Because at that time, I still didn't know where my daughter was.
And now this wonderful relationship has developed with Charlie. You mentioned it when we talked last time, but she is truly an inspiration for you, is she not?
Well, absolutely. First of all, because when I'm talking about not knowing where my daughter was, I'm really talking about the fracture of the family. That, and that for our immediate family was her father, myself, and I. It was absolutely disastrous, and she suffered tremendously so. And I won't go into how I got her back, but I did eventually get her back. I was on a play, on the, a gospel play on the road. She came out, and she was there with me, and she saw a bunch of people who were actually saved, because we hadn't experienced that before. I had become saved too in a whole another situation. And when I got plunked out of where I was in all this disaster, I got plunked into this gospel play with all these church people who were really saved. And they lived that life, and she got plunked into that. And that's how we got to see each other for the first time again and develop our relationship over again. So it was really under the mantle of Christ, literally in my work, and her getting to meet some new different types of artists. I won't say entertainers, because they don't call themselves, or we don't call ourselves entertainers when it's gospel or when it's sacred. And that started a whole new relationship that has blossomed into the point where her dad is now saved. I didn't have anything to do with that, don't get me wrong. But it shows me the power of real forgiveness. And part of it, I'll skip to this part of it, is you discover, because you're past some of the pain, the part that you had to do with it. I never thought I had anything to do with somebody, you know, defaming me and robbing me and just pillaging me so bad. But I saw some things that are, I guess, just human nature and different things that people do in their own consciousness that are not so good, and things that they do to other people that they don't realize unless something tragic like this happens. And then now you have an opportunity, as all these horrible things have happened, you're in the face of each other. And maybe because you have a daughter or someone else to think about outside of yourself, you can get past your own hurts, so you can see, oh, well, whatever it is, I had something to do with it. You had something to do with it. We can do this for our daughter and see if we can get to a place where we can see something else, something new, something fresh. And so the book was ideal, because if she's going to be in charge of me writing the book, I'm not really going to say what I think about her dad, right? I'm joking, but I have to think about those things seriously and in a joyful way. One of the things I think I have, and maybe that's why I got the Tony Award, I have a natural sense of joy and comedy. And that's hugely important when you're trying to get healed.
Another thing monumental in your life, we talked about it, and I advise everybody to go to the WBGO YouTube channel and check out our 2023 chat, where we talked about so much about your family and growing up in a musical household. But one of the monumental things for you was going to Newark Arts High School. And that really cemented the fact that you knew that you wanted to be a performer, because everybody there loved to perform.
Everybody was a performer there. Well, either they were studying performance, or they were studying dance, or they were studying art, drawing and painting, and that kind of thing. But you know, we were all artists, and it was a what can I say? It was a charmed environment. Of course, you knew that it was special, but the experience there, it was a small school, so it was intimate, and so you got to know everybody in whatever grade they were in. And you go by one class, and you hear the band playing, rehearsing or studying. You go another place, and you hear the orchestra playing with the strings. I played viola too. Or you're going by someplace, and they're taking a private voice lesson or a private piano lesson. It's just instrumental study and experience all over you, all in you. So I don't know if you would necessarily want to be a performer when you came out, because I can't speak. I'm trying to look to like individual personalities and try to see past my own personality, just what I feel and what I think. But you had to be so permeated with the spirit of art and music, that you were morphed into someone else, someone better than you were for that experience. Everyone, whether you would teach it or be in it or not, to have that experience is still mind-boggling.
Anybody that wants to cut music education out of their schools, they need to listen to Melba Moore to understand the power.
I hope we do some maybe master classes around places so people can understand how vitally powerful and important it is to everybody. Not a course, not a subject. It's part, it should be like a health requirement.
Yeah. This may be a tough question for you to answer because there are so many highlights for you, but as you look back and when you started the creation of this book, by the way, it's called This Is It, Marvelous and Getting Better. What moment in your life made you, you know, when you're going over the book that you actually stopped and you reflected the most about that, that really made you think back, yeah, that really happened, good or bad?
Well, probably the Tony Award, because that was such, what would you call it, an epiphany? Such it kind of broke in on you because, I mean, if you don't have any idea, you're not in theater, you don't have anything to do with that world. And then with a short amount of time, you are being nominated for and getting a Tony Award. You don't really, not only, well, you know the importance because you've heard of it. And you kind of, because you've heard of it, but at a distance. But have that all now be your personal experience. I'm doing now what I did on the Tony stage. Because it takes a moment for you to take these in and just think about it, much less comment on it. But you're standing here on the stage. The Jack Jones has made a mistake about whose name it was. I don't understand the categories. I don't know why the lights are all on, because usually in the theater, the lights are out. There's nothing that would allow you to acclimate yourself to this. And I wouldn't let myself think about it because I was trying to learn how to act, how to be an actor. So when it came time to you got to make a speech, you got to say something. I didn't have nothing to say. There have been so many moments like that for me, and I'm so grateful for them now because it was so positive. So they were all good. No matter what, how terrible you felt and how scared you were, they were all so good. I can't believe how good they were.
What kind of shows do you have coming up that people might want to know about?
Well, the first one we have is on February 1st at the South Orange Performing Arts Center in South Orange, New Jersey, where my guest star is Mr. Jeff Redd. That's the first live full concert we're having. It is going to be basically an R&B show. Nice R&B. I'm saying that because I have a few different kinds of shows that I kind of focus on. Sometimes I might really focus strongly on my theater background, like I did at 54 Below. And sometimes I do just a combination of songs that I love, that I think people will love, and combination of R&B and well, the other types of music that, well, theater. R&B and theater is usually the combination that I usually have. But it's going to be primarily R&B this time.
We can't wait for that. And everyone needs to check out the new memoir that comes from Amazon Books. It's called This Is It, Marvelous and Getting Better. And once again, stressing, getting better means Melba Moore is still performing out there, folks. And she is certainly somebody that when we look back at the world of entertainment and we think about this amazing career from this young lady who was born in Harlem and then moved to Newark. Wow, what a career. And we thank you for all these amazing performances. Montclair State, BA in music. And as I mentioned, Newark Arts High School. You are New Jersey and New York through and through. The great Melba Moore, thanks for joining us again today on WBGM.
God bless you, Douglas.
You can see my entire interview with Melba Moore on the WBGO YouTube channel. Thanks for listening to the WBGO Journal. I'm Doug Doyle. Join us next Saturday morning at 5:30 for another edition of the award-winning WBGO Journal. In the meantime, stay tuned to the world's greatest jazz and blues station, WBGO and WBGO.org.
Seems like my life has finally come together. Every day that goes by suddenly feels much better. It's the
I'm full.